everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Rhodes Australia's podcast, The Hub. I'm Nicole Lockwood, founder and director of Lockwood Advisory and the independent chair of the Infrastructure Net Zero Initiative, launched in Sydney a fortnight ago. This initiative is a collaboration between seven peak bodies and three government agencies, with a focus on how industry and government can work collaboratively to meet and exceed our national emission reduction targets of 43% by 2030 and net zero by 2050. This includes a work plan based around five common priority areas of work: a national plan and pathway, policy, procurement, capability building and technology. Right across the private sector, there's a strong commitment to decarbonising infrastructure and transport. This is about bringing industry and government together and ensuring the infrastructure of the future is sustainable and equitable. One of the leading companies in the journey to decarbonising infrastructure is Acciona, an organisation with a strong presence here in Australia. Today, we're lucky enough to be joined by Jose Luis Blasco. Jose is based in Madrid, but currently visiting Australia. Jose joined Acciona as Global Sustainability Director in 2019 and has served as CEO of Acciona Carbon Technologies since March of this year. It's a pleasure to have Jose with us and hear from a renowned global expert in this field, particularly after the exciting launch of Infrastructure Net Zero. Jose, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me, Nicole. Very, very, very honored to be here with you in your podcast.
Wonderful. Thank you. It was great to have the opportunity while you're here with us. So to kick us off, what brings you to Australia? Because I imagine you're quite busy while you're here.
Yeah, we must be present where things are happening. And there are a lot of things happening here in Australia. I'd say that we were waiting for Australia for many years in the climate diplomacy. And now Australia is back. And this back is in another completely different time. So I think that we are in an acceleration. We are in an exponential times. And we are very proud about how we are collaborating in this new movement as a company. And the second reason is because Australia is very important for us. Now, last year, I think that roughly the numbers give us the first position in our market. As you know, Acciona is not an infrastructure company as usual. We produce energy to feed Portugal. In terms of, we are not an electric utility because we are preparing one of the largest infrastructure in Australia, also in the world. We want to focus on how we can collaborate to make this net zero target a reality. This is not greenwashing. It is not a narrative. It's a question that the infrastructure has a huge role, an important role, and a great opportunity to be part of the business. Not worry. Yeah. This is not don't forget it. This is a big business. Probably the greatest reallocation of capital in the history of economy, according to McKinsey figures.
I think you're not alone in being excited that Australia's caught up, because we've been feeling a little bit the same. So it's wonderful to now be having a similar conversation as you've been having, I think, for quite some time around the world. So maybe just a little bit around what you have been doing, and you've obviously got a huge task as Global Sustainability Leader. What are you focusing on right now, and what's your role entail? And maybe give your listeners a little bit more about the work that you're doing.
We are very focused on how we can develop our own taxonomy in order to keep our investment aligned with the sustainability activities. You need to be part of the investment committees, advising that what is in, what is out. And the third, that is not less important, is because the green financing for a capital intense company like Acciona or other infrastructure companies, you are a very intense in capital. Green financing is no brainer as an opportunity if you want to focus on green finance. And I think that these three characteristics now keep me busy, but also to follow all the elements that are accelerating every day. It's a hard work itself.
And as you say, changing so quickly. And I think that's part of the challenge for us, is looking around the world and seeing what's already been done and picking up from where others have learned rather than starting at the beginning again. Given the tight timeframe that we've got to get to our targets around decarbonisation, what do you think are the greatest challenges in meeting those targets across the sector?
The most important challenge is that during the last probably 50 years, we enjoy the most bright times of the humanity, but we forgot some of the main issues that we are creating. We have the problem of climate, we have the problem of biodiversity, we have inequality. And I think that to change something that was successful is our main barrier, to change the mindset. For me, the main barrier that we have now is not to make the question that it was in the past, is to have the answer. The infrastructure sector is not easy to decarbonize our operations. Not easy. The technology is not fully available. And we are focused on how we can contribute with this to create the momentum. But we are seeing a lot of KPIs, a lot of indicators that give us a lot of enthusiasm. If you have a look about how the renewable energy is developing, only in the first part of this year, we invest the economic system the same that in all 2022. It is amazing. If you have a look to the electric vehicles in Europe, we are buying more electric vehicles than diesel. A lot of good data that give us that something is changing, something is accelerating, and it's an opportunity for all of us, professionally and also as a human being, to be part of this movement. And I want to be focused on the opportunities and how to solve this in order to have more agents of change.
It's interesting that you call out people as a key lever, and it's certainly my experience that we've got all the technical knowledge we need. It's just about getting everybody to work together in a different way and drive towards the same goals and outcomes. So we'll come back to that, because I think it's quite an interesting area, which doesn't naturally become the obvious, I think, when people think about this area.
Yeah.
But maybe if we go a little bit deeper into what the EU is doing and what Europe's up to, certainly in Australia, we're seeing Europe as leading the way in many respects. And I know you've been heavily involved in the EU taxonomy and environment and sustainable economic activities and the EU's Commission of Technical Working Group, which is something maybe you could tell us a little bit more about. But I know you've also made comments about Australian tunnelling projects are coming in close to double the cost and the carbon emissions of similar projects in Europe. So what do you think we're doing differently, or is there lessons we can learn from Europe that can be equally applied to Australia, given the slightly different context we have here?
If you have a look to the European GDP, it's mostly compounded by services. We are probably the thematic park for the retired people around the world. and if you want to rebel to this situation, you need to reindustrialize. And we had done some mistakes. Most of our manufacturing went to China. More our defense was in the U.S. and our energy in Russia. and they were not so incentivized. And the last European Commission focused on decarbonization as a main driver in order to change the economic system and modernize our industry. I think that the key successful topic was focus not on the regulation, not a regulation about how to do it. Thing is about what's about the finance. If you will become net zero, you have the technological and the change, of course, is a challenge. But the problem is that most of your financial institutions are supported by fossil fuel assets that will become stranded before 20, 25 years. And this is a key problem, because you have a problem with the stability of the financial system. And it was the first priority for the European Commission was to change the financial regulation in order to recognize that we had a problem in terms of the carbon intensity of the asset underlying the position of the financial system should change. It was magic. Because when you put all this financial system to work to the social policy, like the decarbonization, you are gaining a lot of momentum, because you are penalizing one of the most successful activities that you had in your economy system, that is at the fossil fuel base, and you are recognizing another. Then you need to develop some instrument, the taxonomy, the labeling, blah, 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 all of this. But you need to have the political willingness in order to put pressure on the financial regulation in order to make the change happen.
It's certainly been our experience, and I'm not sure how much of it linked to COVID or if it was just a coincidence, but that drive from the finance sector for change really accelerated through the last few years. Do you think that the momentum that Europe's created is enough for Australia to just draw from, or do we need to do things in the Australian context that are specific to the Australian market?
You make this question 6 months ago, probably my answer was different. I think now is the things are changing very quickly.
Yeah.
And I admire about how the mining sector, for example, that would be more reluctant in order to embrace these changes, are reacting. I'm very surprised how the different governments across Australia are developing very, very modern and aggressive policies in order to impulse and accelerate. Why? Because I think that more and more people here in this country is convinced that it's a huge opportunity for this country. And you have the resources and the talent in order to make this transition quicker than other countries in the region. And this is an opportunity to be a leader on that. I can give you a couple of examples. We are talking about renewables. If you have a look about the plan, you have a look, you will now develop your renewable energy capacity with the second generation of technology. And this is an advantage. You are adopting the next generation of renewable energy. You know that you need your transmission lines in order to be responsive to the development of the... But other countries, now they are struggling because they have no money to make these transmission networks. You go to the U.S. and we have curtailment in probably 30 hours in a week, 30 hours not producing any kilowatt. But now in Spain, we are suffering also this because you need to be conscious that you are developing another approach. This is not only about generation, it's also about transmission. And you have a look to the other elements. One is about how to electrify the society, or the production, how to produce the renewable energy in order to feed the demand, and also the infrastructure to connect demand and offer. And you need to play with these three elements. And the lesson learned during the last two decades, I am seeing this in the papers that I'm reading from the government, also from the industry here in Australia. It's why you are in the right path.
Well, it's always even more of an accolade when someone from outside can see that and reflect it back to us. And, you know, it is a relief, I think, for everyone in Australia that we are moving now and quite quickly. And it's interesting, too, as we started to formulate the Infrastructure Net Zero Initiative and you talk about the speed of change, it was very much for us at the beginning, probably a couple of years ago, concern about things not happening fast enough and the need to bring people together to accelerate change. And since that process has been going on and we've been formulating our thinking and then to last week when we launched, so much has moved and government is actually now driving a whole component of the work plan that we were thinking we would be needing to agitate for change. So it is exciting to see that movement. I suppose that model, as we talked earlier about bringing people together and working out solutions collaboratively, is that a model that you're seeing in Europe and is that the way you think we should be going?
Yeah, I think that the problem or the real challenge is connect the dots. I can give you one example that for me is very relevant. If you have a look to the statistics of infrastructure, the productivity of the infrastructure across the world is declining. This is stupid, but it's true. You say when the world is gaining productivity, infrastructure is declining. Why? Because we are not connecting the dots. Mm. Engineers are making their job, the lawyers are making their job, the energy department is making their job and the transport is making their job. But why the highways cannot produce energy? Why we cannot produce supply water from our highways? Because we think very linear. And this is the climate problem. The climate is not a question that we can solve from the energy sector, or is a question that you try to decarbonize your economy, and you need all the talent that you have around you in order to make it happen. And believe me, this is not the niche, and the silos are our main barrier to make it happen. It's not the resources, it's not the technology, it's not it's the mindset that we have, and the resistance to change that we have. We have a lot of examples of successful experience across around the world that connecting the dots makes a real difference. Again, one example, we are developing the line 6 of the metro of Sao Paulo. You can imagine that you have a metro and you have a electric line of 400 volts to input to power them, to fuel them, train. We wonder why we cannot connect this electric line with electric recharger for vehicle. In the fourth largest city in the world, they have only 100 charging points. Sometimes we are overvalue the power of collaboration, but sometimes if you have not this. This is not empty words. I would say this is not, we need to have a partnership, we need to share. Yeah. But there are real solutions that could be solved only crossing the corridor.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but from what I see, it's the first time that someone's inaction is actually my problem, or me taking action is to someone else's benefit. So we're so interconnected now with the way everything's measured and valued that even if we don't want to collaborate, we sort of need to. Otherwise, we're all not going to get there together. So it's a very different dynamic than we've had.
Yeah, and we have not the all answers.
As a group maybe, but certainly not on our own, that's for sure. So knowing that the power is in connecting people and problems and collaborating, there are obviously some other mechanisms that can speed things up. So in terms of accelerating net zero, do you think carbon pricing or altering the way carbon offsets are managed is the way to go, or are there other things that are more powerful?
Carbon pricing have a role. From the demand side, there are a lot of things to do. A lot. First of all, I think that we think that public procurement is a very good tool. But here in Australia, probably you have the most bright system in order to score sustainability in the infrastructure. It's very unique. The Infrastructure Sustainability Council and how you are planning with the public procurement, believe me, it's very unique. It's very unique. I'm trying to copy and paste to other jurisdictions because the system of contracting and alliance of collaborating contracting is very unique because give you the opportunity to panel and to evolve those. Let me give you a couple of more restrictable, not so flexible, that works very well in another country. This is the restriction of traffic in the center of the cities. It's not casual that you have now more. You are selling more electric vehicles in Europe than diesel, because you cannot go into the cities if you have a bad car. This is important when, in Europe, you have a very large manufacturer industry and a lot of job linkage to that. And you need to modernize this kind of thing. You are putting an effort to improve this, but it is very powerful. I can give you another example. In Oslo, in Norway, you cannot make public works with a diesel crane. Their contractors only use electric yellow gears. You have also another policy that you can use. We call it about the 3F: frame, long-term regulation that give you safe harbors to invest. The other, second is fiscal. We were astonished about the successful policies in the US. The IRA is a real real success in order to transform and to impulse decarbonization in a country that probably 3-4 years ago were not the more active. And now it's only 1 year after. We need to remember that IRA only have 1 year. 1 year, and they have the same result that the Europeans spend 2 or 3 years in order to get the same result. And the third F is the financing. Sure. Is the finance. You have the framework, you have the fiscal, and you have the finance. Copy and paste policies that we are seeing around the world, trying to have these carrot and sticks more available for the companies, taking into account that you need to impulse the restrictions in order to make it realistic, and also and this restriction impulse the demand, and the demand develop the technology, and the pricing are dropping very quickly. The Moore's law is reality, is a reality in every single technology that you are seeing in the renewables.
Yeah. And I think, again, we're in the beneficial position of looking around at what's worked, and the federal government at the moment is compiling a list of possible policy levers that we could bring in to accelerate decarbonisation so we can take the best of those. But you've just really clearly explained that actually it's innovation that's going to get us a long way there. So in terms of needing sort of transformative change, what exciting new technologies are you seeing emerge, and where do you think need to be investing more to bring those solutions to life?
It's a difficult question because there are a lot of things that we are seeing now. Let me talk about the more mature, that the opportunities in the next 6 months or 1 year. There are many people working on very amazing technology, but they're realistic that the industrial ones that we are looking for, this is Acciona's priorities. The first is integrating renewables in everything. We are integrating renewables in bridges, in buildings, in roads, in everything, because we are seeing that in the future we will have the NIMBY effect, a not in my backyard effect for renewables, and we need to have more capacity installed, and we need to be more efficient introducing these renewables as an element in the current infrastructure. And we are looking for how we can improve the efficiency of this element to produce energy. The second is the energy storage. There are a huge market there. Why? Because the renewables are intermittent. And you need to have resilient systems. And the energy storage and there are not only one technology. Gravity is a very promising. Water bombing is another promising that we are using. But we are waiting for the solid state batteries. That's saying that is a game changer. And this is only possible if you have another type of battery. And solid state batteries is real. It's only probably before the end of the decade, the batteries will be solid. Charging points. Charging points is another, there are a lot of innovation behind it. We need to charge quicker. This is a low-hanging fruit. This is not easy at this stage because it is not a question to invent the device in order to charge faster. It's a question of how you define and design the network in order to provide a huge volume of energy in both directions, the direction from the cars and the batteries to the grid and the grid to the devices. I think we are very excited about this technology. That is following with the in the infrastructure sector around the water is amazing. Around the water there are happening a lot of things. We are now opening our first desalination plant fully fit by renewables. And probably all the buildings, all the water devices, all the equipment and the infrastructure should be self-performing in terms of energy. And we have biomass, we have biogas, we have biochar, that is another technology that we are using. And we are also excited about the carbon capture directly from the air. we are not so confident that the carbon the capture and storage is a solution, because it's only, in my, this is my personal opinion, we are only gaining time for fossil fuels, and probably will distract to invest in the right solution, trying to solve the problems. And this is probably not the a clever way to solve the problem. But if you want to have fun during one day, you can procrastinate during all day, looking, jumping from one technology to another, because it's vibrant, the current environment. But I only refer to the more mature investment that we are exploring, because in renewables there are a lot of new developments coming from technology and also from startups that are trying to invent or reinvent how the nature works. We have a lot of biomimicry in this kind of innovations.
So Jose, maybe to wrap up, this is a massive challenge that we're facing as a world. And as we've talked about, it brings the best of us in terms of our brains and our capability and creativity, but also our ability to work together. And at times, I'm not sure about you, but it can get a little bit overwhelming. So I think what I've loved about our conversation today is actually all of the enthusiasm and the positivity that you're bringing to the things you're seeing and the momentum that seems to be building. So in terms of thinking about how we get to net zero by 2050, what excites you most about this journey? And what do you think the infrastructure could look like in the future?
According to the study of, I think that is net zero needed here in Australia, we need to multiply by 8 the investment. To make it happen, I am very, very optimistic. Why? It's because it's not an extra funding that we need sometimes. It's only to reallocate the current investment in the wrong technology to the right one. And it's why I am very optimistic. McKinsey said that we have 9.1 trillion a year to be reallocated. Probably, as I said before, the largest reallocation in the economic history. And you need to put the right carrot, the right the carrot in the right place. If you put the carrot in the right place, and what are these carrots, and why I am very optimistic on that, and the role of infrastructure. We are very focused on decarbonize the how. We are talking about how we can have green concrete, green steel, less carbon in our operations. That's perfect. But it's very a small portion. I think that the next generation will be focused on how we can develop, design, operate, and maintain infrastructure that is part of the solution. Because if we are investing or producing or redeveloping infrastructure that produces CO2, we'll be in stranded asset in a decade. For me, it's very promising how the Australian institutions are working around their own technology. Taxonomy. Because the taxonomy gives you, for those that they are not so familiar what is a taxonomy, is a taxonomy is a classification about what kind of technology will be compatible with the net zero. It's the thing that, imagine that Nicole, you and me take the elevator, push the 2050 bottom, okay, open the doors, we are in 2050. Okay, guys, are we net zero? Yes, you got it. We got it the last year. Okay, how the electricity is produced? And the answer is a taxonomy. With less of 100 grams CO2 per kilowatt hour. Ah, this is the answer. Why we need to wait for 2050? We can get it today. Why we cannot invest in this technology today? And this is the signal that that taxonomy is sending to the financing sector. From how to what? Probably 1 year ago, an article from Nature, in the Nature magazine, that 72% of the sustainable development goals are supported by infrastructure. So infrastructure is the operating system of a society. If you don't change the operating system, difficult. difficult to change all the system. And the third challenge, or the tenth policy is about the professional. We need to wonder if we have the skills to make the change. Because this is not the digital revolution. It's harder than the digital revolution. It is not a question that you can learn in because your son is teaching you how to access to one application. It's a question of we are transforming the head of the engine of the economic development that is based on fossil fuel. And there are a lot of jobs that could be in danger. When we are talking about just transition, I'm wondering what is just transition? Because if you are in the fossil fuel sector, if you are linked to this sector, you may know that in 27 years we'll become net zero. This question that you need, well, it's uncomfortable truth, but you are now in the wrong place. Please don't wait. Change now. If you have a son, give him or her the advice that in the right direction. Yeah. If your company is taking the wrong decision, raise your hand, because your job is in danger. And I think that is the role of all of us to recycle ourselves in order to have the skills and to have the mindset to accelerate this change, because it's a question of time. You can remember you have read probably how difficult it was to change the mindset to change the horse to a car. We are in the same situation. If we are saying no, but the horse, you can put you can leave the horse and eat in grass, and you don't need to go to the petrol station in order to recharge your car. And this kind of changes in the history of in the story of economic times probably are the same. But Nicole, we are very happy to live these times, isn't it? Yeah. And we're part of this. I'm afraid, for example, imagine that your son, you are very young, but I am afraid that my son asked me, where have you been? Where you was in 1996 when the internet revolution? Why you are not that? Why you are not Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates? Well, you have not, you were not aware about the changes that were developing at the time. It is the same that we are now. The decarbonization revolution is here, and you, me, all of our audience could be part of them. It's only a question of attitude.
Yeah. I think that's a really powerful way to finish, because certainly if we can't find the motivation to do it for ourselves, then we must do it for our children. And I think what you've painted today is a picture of a lot of positivity, optimism, momentum, and for the role you're playing in that and the message you're sharing and experience you're giving to others, can I thank you? Because it takes a lot of people to achieve this goal, and I think you're playing a really powerful role in getting us there. So it's been absolutely wonderful to hear more about what you've been doing and to impart that on us and certainly to hear some positive about what you're seeing in Australia, which I think we're needing to hear at the moment as we really catch up on some lost time. So I think that puts us in a good position. So thank you so much for your time today. To everyone listening, we hope you've really enjoyed today's episode. And to keep up to date with the work of Infrastructure Net Zero, simply head to our website, which is infrastructurenetzero.org, and be sure to keep up to date with the work of our peak body partners, including Roads Australia, by following them across their social media channels. Thanks again for listening and being part of this important conversation.